Everybody, drop your buffs.
Welcome back to Drop Your Buffs. I'm Sean Ross.
I'm Evan Ross Katz.
And we are here talking Survivor 46, Episode 7, Episode Several. Very cheeky.
Think that's the name of it?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm going to KMS.
But before we get to Survivor 46, we're buzzing over here because literally moments ago, we just wrapped a brand new interview with a Survivor alum. It's been a long time since we've done an interview. It's been a long time.
Who was the last?
Kathy Vavrick O'Brien?
Oh, yeah. Which was like last summer.
Ages ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was actually like a little nervous. I was like a little nervous about the interviewing skills and like putting together the questions. I was like, it's almost like you got to practice that.
Well, I want to point out something that you did, which I thought was very high level. So what? I always think there's like the one quality in a great interviewer that I always notice, and something I think Barbara Walters was so terrific at, and it took me a long time to like get to this, which is that you don't always need to have a question. Sometimes you can just make a statement to the person and pause, because instinctively, when it comes to chatter, if you kind of lay it down, they'll pick it up. And there was a moment where you declared something and I was like, oh, he's going to follow up with a question, even though it's all there. And you didn't. And I was like, wow, Sean is a really great interviewer.
Was it the Christie thing?
I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and listen to it, but you did a really great job of just stating something.
Should we just say who it was? Because this will be coming out probably early next week
if I
get to it. we just interviewed Heidi Hamels, formerly Heidi Strobel, of Survivor, the Amazon icon.
Wow.
And somebody who just doesn't talk Survivor. She did one episode of Talking with T-Bird in 2020. We listened to that episode and we were like blown away by it. It's an all-time episode of Talking with T-Bird. Don't go listen to it because you'll go spoil some of the topics in our interview, but highly recommend.
Would you qualify Heidi's appearance on Drop Your Buffs as an all-time Drop Your Buffs appearance?
Yeah, I think it was good. I think it was great.
Well, I would. I'm so moved by her. Like, I literally just went into the other room because we're taping this right after we taped it. And I said to Billy, I was like, I think Heidi made me believe in God.
Well, this is the wild thing that I want to tell everybody is that Heidi, and we've sort of teased this a little bit on the Patreon, I think, is that we reached out to Heidi a long time ago, like a couple months ago. And Evan just kind of cold reached out to her, DM'd her and said like, hey, we've got this podcast. It's about Survivor. Would you be interested? And her response was something like, I always say no to these, but I feel like I'm supposed to say yes to this one. And we were like, we were a little shaken. I got chills when you told me that. And she brought it up at the end of the interview. She was like, everything I do in life, I pray on it. I ask God, should I do this? Should I not? And she said, God told her to do this, which means, fuck the bad reviews. We've got the man upstairs listening to Drop Your Buffs.
Mm-hmm. Not only is he listening, he's clearly a fan.
Or she, or they. As Ariana Grande once famously declared.
Which makes you wonder, it's like, if God is a fan of ours, and we are such haters on Survivor... Is God a fan of New Era Survivor? Or is God basically saying we need to return to how things were?
Parasites. We need to return to season several.
Mm-hmm. Oh, jeez.
Let's bring it back.
But yes, it is. I'm really excited for people to hear it, but it also sort of like reinvigorated for me. Because again, as you pointed out, we haven't done one of these in a while. There's something about interviewing old school players who are not in the public eye, who are not on social media, who went and played a game, had an experience of a lifetime, and then resumed life as they knew it. There's just something about that quality that I not even Evan Drop Your Buffs co-host, just Evan human being. Like, those are my favorite kinds of people.
Well, but not only did she do Survivor, drop it, and carry on with her life, but actually she did a great job of talking about how the trajectory of her life changed because of Survivor, and there's no looking back.
Yes.
We got her to look back at Survivor, which was great, and I love that so much. But, like, she's not one of these people who's, like, interested in Survivor still, but she recognizes how it changed the course of her life for the better and how she was able to take that experience and give back to herself and give back to others. And it's, like, it's inspiring.
Yeah. And as I mentioned on the pod to her, but, like, I came away from it thinking there's a version of that season that could be re-edited to tell a completely different story mm-hmm. about Heidi. And I think that's, like, remarkable. And again, it's not, I don't think the editors did it wrong. You know what I mean? I think that there's always many versions of the story that can be told, but it's just so interesting hearing from someone like her. She's a great, like, recall of that mm-hmm. season, a great perspective on it that's both hindsight, but also she seems to, like, she is, like, one of those people, and I try and live this way too, where it's like you do the thing and you keep it pushing, right? You don't need to reflect on coulda, woulda, shoulda. You're sort of like, this is my experience, onward, upward, wherever we go. And so it was really fun getting her to, like, dip a toe back in, offer her perspective on things, but not necessarily with the, like, oh, like the 20 years later lens per se. So I found it a very fascinating interview.
Yeah, totally. And I think there's more I would like to dive into in the interview, maybe like next week's after show, after everyone's heard it. Because I think there were things that were both said and unsaid that are significant.
So yeah, let's get into that. And then, you know, I side texted you saying, I feel like, you know, obviously the live show is coming. LOL. And I feel like Heidi would be a great example of the kind of person I would love to see at a live show.
If we could drag her away from her life for 5 seconds. I know. She's a very busy woman.
She is so fucking busy.
I mean, you know what the thing that fascinates me about Heidi is, like, she's got all this stuff. She's fucking building schools in Malawi. That's amazing. She's got all this stuff going on. But she is a country music songwriter and a very successful one and owns a country music publishing company that is very successful. They go to number one all the time. And, like, that, we need to have her back because I wanted to ask about that. That's wild.
There's so much to get into.
Yeah.
Do you think that she has interacted with Chase of Survivor Nicaragua?
What a question. Why didn't we ask that question?
Maybe we'll reach out to her. Maybe we'll see. You know what? Maybe we'll do this for, like, next week's after show or something. I'll reach out over voice memo and see if she would voice memo her response. That would be great.
I would love that because we did talk to her about season 21, actually. And we even talked to her about season 46. We talked to her about the one and only Liz Wilcox.
Yeah, who Liz is having a time on that keyboard.
Oh yeah, Liz is all over the Twitter. Liz loves this podcast, so hi Liz. You're giving us material, and you know what? I don't want to put the cart before the horse here, but I think Liz may be in contention for the Azra Vilani Award.
I do not disagree. And I gotta say, like, Liz is being really spicy on Twitter, but it's like, what do they say? You know how it's like the chaotic neutral, is it like chaotic evil, chaotic good? It's like she's like being like chaotic good.
Yeah, I think.
Like, I have something to say. I mean, I do not agree with her, which we'll get into in the after show. But I appreciate her, like, putting the foot down on the pedal and hitting the gas.
Oh yeah, I could argue with somebody. I want to have a difference of opinion. I'd rather have a difference of opinion than both go, yeah, you're right.
Excuse me, I wrote about this in my newsletter this week when I wrote about Shakira's comments about, you know,
I haven't talking. Read that one yet. Yeah.
Well, but I only bring it up. This is not meant to be a plug, but which is to say, I have a big appreciation for people that are loud and wrong. And again, Liz would not say she is wrong. She would say she's right and I'm wrong. But, like, I appreciate people who are loud about their opinion and stand in it. So.
Yeah, I love it. I've got to say, with this episode, I was thinking even before sort of like the Twitter stuff, et cetera, that we're talking about, but I have to say with this episode, I sort of like realized something about Liz, and it's that I think that we were talking about Banu early in the season as being kind of an older school sort of casting, like a 20s kind of casting where it's like a real wackadoodle, as he called himself. And I do stand by that, but I also think that Liz is a little bit of a throwback cast member because I think that, and Liz I know you're probably listening, and don't take this the wrong way, but I think there is sort of a chasm between the way Liz perceives herself and the way other people perceive Liz, even in the game. And I think you get this perfectly summed up in moments like the money talk, right? I mean, like, Liz is telling that story to talk about sort of like her journey and how she's successful outside of the game. And other people are perceiving that as like, you are tone deaf and we're never voting for you to win $1 million. And I thrive on that in Survivor. It's like, those are the moments I'm looking for. And there was sort of moments like where Liz was laying on the beach in this episode, or was she, I think she was a part of the nap taking, but there's certain things where just like, I'm noticing little moments of Liz and I'm like, this is the kind of person we should be casting. Like, they're just a little bit less self-aware, or they're a little, it's not even self-awareness, but it's like the way that you're presenting yourself isn't overthought in a way. And I think a lot of new era contestants are overthinking the way that they're presenting themselves, which and calling it strategy or whatever. And I think that Liz is missing that. And I love that as a Survivor character trait.
So I don't agree at all.
Really?
I would say that chasm you're speaking to feels very performative to me on the edits part. So I completely agree with the principle of what you're speaking to. And I don't think Liz is an example of that.
Interesting.
But yes, I too recognize that quality that you like. And I do see it in Liz. But I think that the edit is like, let's create this chasm more than I think it is in real life. But hey, my opinion, you're wrong, I'm right, whatever. But okay, wait, before we move forward though, let's pause to speak about this real quick. And you and I have not offlined about this, but it's been something I've been thinking about. Shout out to Liz, shout out to Charlie, shout out to the season 46 players listening. Here's my question. We've heard from a lot of people that they miss us doing Star or Starless, which we like sometimes are doing on the after show and we'll probably continue this week. But I have reservations, right? Just because I am very mean, as a lot of you listening are nodding your head along as I say, but it is not my desire to be a mean person. And I feel like there's a little bit of a moral conundrum in assigning Star or Starless when, as we experienced with Kelly last season, calling someone Starless, even though we can say explicitly this is not a judgment about them as a human being, I understand the argument that, like, we are making some sort of judgment on them. We're literally calling them Starless. And so I guess it's just, like, I have trouble talking about these players knowing that they're listening, while I also contend with the fact that, like, you are choosing to listen to us. There are many Survivor podcasts out there. There are many. And you've chosen to come into our home. And in our home, we furnish it how we please. We serve the meals that we please. It is our home. I'm wondering, how do you feel about all this? How are you reconciling having listeners that are on the show that we might want to talk shit about?
I think that when it comes to Star or Starless, first, I just want to correct the record on something. Kelly's issue, as it was told to us, was never about Star or Starless, just to be clear. Her issue was about us talking about her challenge performance. But I do think that when it comes to players listening, I do think that the players who are listening know what they're getting into. We have one player on this season who's a patron. So have I told you that?
No, but I think I can guess.
You might be surprised.
Okay.
And so, anyways, I think that at this point, I think especially the Survivor 46 players who are listening, and at least have indicated to us that they're listening, I think they know what they're getting, and I think they kind of like it. And, you know, at least one of them has, like, almost egged us on to be like, please talk shit about me.
I love that one.
Yeah.
I really do. Soft spot. But can I just say, though, to the one that you're speaking to, I have not once altered what I wanted to say about this player because I know that they're listening. So it's not that I think I'm changing notes. I just wanted to get like a temperature check on that.
Yeah. And then so, like, this, to the Starless thing, it's like the reason for me that I haven't even been thinking about playing Star or Starless for 46 is because we haven't been enjoying 46. Right. And part of that is, well, a large part of that is the edit of the show, which is, I think, making the vast majority of people starless for me. And so like for, especially the, in the pre-merge, like playing star starless was going to be all starless, unfortunately, mm-hmm. with like the odd outlier of a star. And so like, it just felt redundant. It wasn't that I didn't want to be mean. It was just like, are we going to waste our time just saying starless, 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 starless? Now that we're at this point in the game, which look, I think, do I have issues with the fact that they're having their first real merge vote and splitting them into two tribes? Yeah, I've got issues with that, like I have every season, and I'll repeat myself again next season. But I do think that this episode provided some material for a star or starless. I think that, like, format issues aside, I had fun with this episode.
Okay, well, why don't we do it now then?
Oh, okay.
Let's do put it. It on I mean, let's spin the wheel. I mean, why the fuck not? okay. Are you good? Okay, do it now?
I'm ready.
Okay, great. I'll go through the list and we'll play a little round of star or starless. Starting with Tim.
Starless.
Starless. Soda.
Starless Rising.
Starless. Ben.
Starless.
Starless. Charlie.
Star.
Starless Rising. Hunter.
Starless. Period.
Starless. Kenzie.
Starless Rising.
Starless. Liz.
Starless Rising.
Starless Rising. Maria.
Starless.
Wow.
Well, I could rising. Look. I could see the rising just in this episode. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I saw it. You know what? Starless Rising, because the whole interaction with Venus, I thought.
I thought that was it for me as well.
I forgot about it.
Q.
Star.
Star. Tevin.
Starless Rising.
Starless. Tiffany.
Starless.
Starless. Venus.
Star.
Star. So I think the most...
That's
my
everybody?
Takeaway. Yeah, that's everyone. So my takeaway from this is like, I feel like for you and I... we're in alignment that like Q is really emerging mm-hmm. as one to watch. And you've mentioned this before, and I'm in total agreement. There's just an old school quality about Q. When you talked about that, that sort of lack of self-awareness with Liz, I see that not in the same way with Q, but there's like a, confidence, like a blowhard confidence that he has about not just his position in the game, but his understanding about like the 3D game that's being played that I really value. While at the same time, like, I think he might be as intelligent and aware as he's presenting. I don't know. And so that makes him really interesting. Because there's like, there's a version of Q where you're like, he thinks he's running the game and little does he know. But there's also a version of Q that's like, he's running the game. And like, despite the fact that people might say he's not, like, he's going to keep advancing on in the game. And I will point out, there's a deleted scene from this week's episode. My God, why are we deleting scenes and then having 90-minute episodes? But I think for those of you that saw it, you know, you might be... what is with me in doing this nodding along thing? But you might be nodding along. But Q has a great scene where he basically goes through every remaining contestant and gives his perspective on them and their gameplay.
Oh.
And it's fantastic.
I love that.
Yeah. And so he says Tevin's going to go to the end and lose, which I think is a really interesting...
interesting.
Yeah, interesting remark.
Wow. Because this is the thing, and this is why I think I gave Tevin Starless Rising. Like, Tevin's around, and I think he's a good narrator, and he's like...
I don't.
Interesting.
I don't.
Why, do you think it's a bit of a put-on?
I just think it's a little bit... it's so, like, new era narrator mm-hmm. to me.
It totally
which it's like,
is.
It's like your primary function is narrator.
It totally is. But I you know, if I'm saying, like, do I love that? No. But is he good at that? Yes. I think he's mm-hmm. good at that. It comes more naturally to him than to some others. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like a put on to me. It feels like that's him. Would I vibe with that in real life? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But I think that he's good at what he does. And so, like, I give him credit for that. But I do think that we get him a lot. He's narrating a lot. And we're getting his perspective on other people a lot, especially the Soda Venus situation and other things like the Journey 6, etc. But like, we don't really ever get anybody talking about Tevin. We don't know how other people feel about Tevin. Mm-hmm. We hear about Soda, we hear about Venus, we hear about Hunter, we never hear about Tevin. And so, like, are they hiding something from us? Is there nothing to say? Because that's almost worse. We're not getting everybody saying, I love Tevin, I want to work with Tevin, nor are we getting, except for a brief moment in this episode where Venus said, Soda or Tevin, you know, like, I don't care which one. Which that was interesting to me because it was the first time somebody had ever really thrown out Tevin's name as like a potential option to go home. So yeah. I would like to like drill down a little more. So Q saying that he could go to the end and get no votes. That's fascinating to me. Why? Something there. Maybe other people, maybe people see this quality to him that's very new era narration and are put off by it.
Well, not here. Now, I have four notes total that I took this episode. Can I give two of them up here?
There's only four?
Yeah.
Might wrap quickly. Okay.
No, I'm just not very like note-driven when it comes to Survivor 46. It's like I can hold it in my head. But there are two iconic visuals, which I hope can make their way into the meme cap. Happy to help with that. And it would be one, Venus's confessional in the tree. Mm. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I just loved it. It was giving me old school. It was just exactly what we talk about craving. I think we always go back to the Ace confessional from Gabon with the elephant in the back. Obviously, this wasn't that level, but there's just something about the visual of a confessional. Was there one earlier this season, though, where someone was in the water?
I don't recall that.
Or I think that was recent at someone. But anyway, needless to say, I really like that visual. And then...
But wait, before we move on from that, I just have to like give Venus credit here because Venus has been so good at this. And Venus has an old school quality to her as well in terms of how she interacts with the cameras, how she uses the cameras to tell her story. And we've pointed this out on past episodes that Venus loves an on-the-fly confessional. Venus is at the shelter. She's not waiting to give her thoughts for when a producer pulls her aside. She looks to the camera and is like, oh my God, can you believe this is going on? Like, I got to get myself out of this situation. I love that. I think that that's a skill, and I think it's a seriously underrated skill on Survivor.
Totally. I totally agree. Yeah. Venus is great. We just need, like I said last week, and I stand by it, it's like, I need more layers to her, and I'm not saying that she doesn't possess them. I'm saying that either that or that the edit needs to like allow for more. At the same time, I appreciate in the conflict with Maria that I think this actually speaks to Maria's game in a lot of ways, where it's like, you don't need to move through this game with people that you like or that you are wanting to be friends with in the long run. You can look at someone, and this is why I think Maria is a very savvy human being, that Maria can look at someone like Venus and be like, I don't like her, and I can work with her in this game, whether it be for one vote or to the end, we don't know yet. But like, I think we don't get that enough. I think it's, we get so much about like, who do I wanna work with? And it's like, well, maybe work with someone that you don't agree with, you know, their you know, way they communicate or what have you, but that can actually benefit you. And so anyway, I like that. My other visual cue would be Kenzie using the buff as a bow. And I just was wondering, can you recall any other, I just feel like we've seen so many amalgamations of the buff throughout time. That was a twist for me.
Even I think Tim had a new buff look this episode that I'd never seen before as well. But have I seen the bow? I have Ooh, have I seen the bow? Did Bob in Gabon make his buff a bow tie? I think he may have.
Wow.
If I'm not mistaken, that just came to me. So there may be precedent for a bow, but not quite the hair bow. And I gotta say, Kenzie is a hairstylist, salon owner. And not only has she done the bow, we didn't touch on this before, but you know, a couple episodes ago, she also did the palm frond woven scrunchie. So she's doing hair looks. I thought your other visual was going to be Charlie standing with his hand on his hip, with his buff on his head, not just draped on his
head. I gotta say, I didn't catch that in the episode. I caught it as a meme, but but now that it's like, it's sticking. Yeah,
the second I saw that in the episode, I was like, this is a Jake Flippers moment.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, so I saw that you posted, like, someone did it as a meme next to MJ from The Traitors, mm-hmm. and, like, that didn't make any sense to me. Yeah, I know. It clicked when someone geniusly put it next to that iconic photo. It's actually, the reason why this photo is so iconic and, like, explaining this, I feel, like, completely unwell. But there's a photo of Jamie Lee Curtis from, like, the Freaky Friday era, on a red carpet with her hand on her hip. But the reason why the photo is famous for me, and I think some other people, is it was iconically only existed in very grainy form for a long time. And then it was like an HD version of it was like discovered years later.
I don't know any of this history.
Yeah, like it was known as like a blurry photo. And then it, like, basically, like, it was, like, restored, you know what I mean? And that's why I always love that photo of Jamie Lee Curtis. Anyway, so I loved it. And yes, it matches up against Charlie well enough to, like, give it diptych feel.
Totally, totally.
But, like, why don't get the MJ thing?
Well, no, I mean, I don't think it means anything. It's just two people standing in a funny way.
See, but, like...
I know.
Not
I know.
To like be that person, but like I know. Think we devalue like, I knew the power
we were coming. I knew we were coming in here today to this.
I'm sorry. It's kind of like right now the new format that I'm seeing on Twitter, which I can kind of see is like, so everyone's for some reason really loving this quote where it's like the current template is it's the Sex and the City girlies, and you put a Miranda quote, you put a Samantha quote, you put a Charlotte quote, and then you end with Carrie saying Big's moving to Paris. And then, you know, as is the life cycle of a meme now people just take the Carrie quote, Big is moving to Paris, and then you apply it to anything. It's sort of like mm-hmm. the new format in the same vein of, you know, thanks for spilling, or what is it, Mama?
Kudos
for saying that for spilling. It's the same kind of idea. But the Big is moving to Paris thing, it's like, you can't just apply any image. There are some
You know what,
images.
I barely get it. Is there something I'm missing?
I think the idea of the joke is that, like, care, because people love this narrative. This pisses the fuck out of me. People love this narrative that Carrie Bradshaw is, like, this selfish cunt. And my unpopular opinion is it's, like, everyone is a selfish cunt. That's the whole reason you see yourself in Carrie. And also, like, she's the main character. Mm. Like, people complain that Carrie suffers from main character syndrome. And it's, like, what the fuck, you idiot. Anyway, this to say, I think that quote is meant to sort of like highlight the idea that Carrie turns any conversation and spins it back to her.
It was like, earthquake just hit New York.
Yeah.
Big is moving to Paris.
Moving to Paris, yeah. Which okay. I find that funny.
Okay. Well, I have to say, back on Q, when Q allegedly threw the challenge... First of all, do we believe him? I mean, he's like lost every challenge this season.
Do I believe him? I don't know.
Okay. I don't know that I believe sure. that he threw the challenge, but he was talking a big game about it. I got to say, another point for Q is that him sitting on the sit-out bench, that was hot.
Wow, like okay.
That was hot. He's got like a hot little body. And I did like the alphabet game stuff. I do like to see them, you know, like I like these moments where I know we've been like getting the camp life that we've long been asking for. And now we're walking back and being like, maybe we don't need this camp life. But this is a moment that it's not camp life, but I was like, oh, they're having fun. And like people are being dodos. And this is the kind of content I would like to see. If we're sitting through an endurance challenge, which isn't actually an endurance challenge because Jeff is going to make it impossible in 17 minutes, then, I'd at least take this content over Jeff narrating the challenge, you know?
Mm-hmm. I just, like, this is the problem. I was about to say this is the problem with Jeff, which I, like, caught myself, like, because Heidi, in our episode, which you'll hear, makes a really compelling argument to, like, there's nuance to Jeff that we don't always see, you know? But one of my big issues with Jeff in this episode was, sure, like, I enjoyed that moment with the alphabet thing a little bit, but then it's... Sorry, it's my bone broth.
sorry. He's got a wedding dress to fit in a week.
Yeah, seriously. But then it's like you have to get that like obligatory like cut to Jeff being like, this is one of the wackiest moments on Survivor ever. And it's just like, shut the fuck up.
He did say it's the most fun he's ever had in a challenge. Ever.
Oh my god! And it's like, and you know, this it's is like, especially and meanwhile funny.
In Africa, you were like blending what blood and milk.
Yeah, or in the Amazon, you were getting to stare at a topless Heidi and Jenna. You know,
not just it's topless; they were bottomless too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. We're gonna have to meme that. Just to warn you,
I'm gonna need you to clip that out because sure. I have a high quality version.
I got it. I got my bone broth and I got my HD Survivor. But yeah, I didn't love that.
Yeah.
Okay. But I just like, why couldn't they just stay on? I like the three different rungs, but it's just like, just, you don't, once they get up into the top and they're surfing, I don't know. I'm like, just hold them at the top rung.
Yeah, exactly. Let them stand there.
Stand there.
It's an endurance challenge.
It's Kathy funny because Maverick
O'Brien did it for hours and she won.
Right. And, you know, we're mentioning that iconic, you know, the chocolate peanut butter cola challenge with Heidi and Jenna. That challenge is just them standing on essentially a little dock in the water. Oh,
it's iconic. And I mean, like, it goes back to, I mean, there was a version with the 100 bottles of beer on the wall in Borneo, but they were on a... just a plank. The one with the Heidi and Jenna thing kind of goes back to Australian Outback. It was the first merge challenge. It went into the night. They had to bring a boat in to get them because the water was too cold for them to go into. And that's where so much happens. And like back in the Australian Outback, what happened there that was so critical is they had time to talk and it slipped that Jeff Varner had received a vote at a tribal council. So now these two tribes that had come together at even numbers, it gave the Ogacores the upper hand to know that they can force the tie against Jeff Varner and he would go home because of his previous vote. That all happened because of an endurance challenge.
You pulling out the name of that tribe is great and disturbing. It's like, get a life. I have a question. If anyone happens to be on season 46 and is listening in, could you call in and let me know? I want to know, what is Jeff doing during this challenge? Because it's rare in the new era that the players get a lot of just unbridled time with Jeff. And I speculate that one of the reasons why we don't get these long endurance challenges is because people like Jeff don't want to sit around when they don't have to, because there are like more efficient ways to make this television show, because what is this at the end of the day? A television show. But this seems like one of those challenges where like Jeff's around for a little while. And so are people talking to Jeff? Is Jeff interacting with the cast? Is he talking to the sit outs? Is he talking to those eliminated? What's going on with Jeff during a challenge in New Era Survivor, an endurance challenge?
I've always wondered, like, does he ever talk, like, stop and talk to production while the challenge is going on? Right, because
it's like the Jeff of today just is not as, I feel like there's a little bit more of a distance that Jeff has built between him and the cast in a way where I think, like, back in the day, he was able to be a little bit more chummy, whereas now he really wants to be seen as this sort of, like, agnostic force that comes in during challenges and during tribal. That's why you always get that beat, you know, when he shows up on the beach because of a medevac or whatever, the cast is always like, oh my god, it's Jeff Probst, right? And I feel like the show really likes celebrating the idea that like the players regard him as a deity. So if that's the case though, in moments like this, like what's the interaction like?
Yes, but no, because also we've seen Jeff be overly chummy with everybody, and everybody comes in and says, Jeff, you look great today. And he's like, oh my god, thanks.
But that to me feels just more like a beat that gets hit.
Exactly, exactly. That's my point. It's like, I think that Jeff plays the role of chummy now, but he's the boss. Where back in the day, before he was the boss, and even a little after, there was like a sort of rocky transition period there, but you know, before season 20 and before, and you have these great moments, and I know they're not always, but it's like Courtney Yates in China, you know, ribbing on Jeff a little bit was so fun because it was like Jeff was sort of like thrust into that position and sort of had to, and he was younger, and so he was like more peer level with these people, even though he was hosting the show they were on, and so there was like he had to take it a little bit, and I think that that dynamic was really interesting, where here it's very like, dad's here to run the challenge. Hey, dad. But it's not necessarily like truly chummy in the way that we saw in the first 20 seasons. Hmm. So yeah, tell us what Jeff is up to during the challenges.
Yeah. Okay. So then one other thing I just wanted to bring up too is like, okay, so because we just sort of jumped right into this episode of Drop Your Buffs, to get sort of like a temperature read on the season. So I feel like these last two episodes are clearly, we're in a better place than we were with those first five. I mm-hmm. think that we had a particularly fraught episodes 2, 3, and 4 with all of the attention being on Banu, that I think that it's like, okay, finally some food. My question is, the consensus I'm seeing seems to be like, okay, finally we're eating. But I'm not all the way there just yet, you know? Like, sure. I definitely think that we have turned around. I definitely am more entertained by these episodes. There were definitely moments in this episode that I was really engaged with. But there's still that quality where it's like, talk about the Ben Kenzie moment with his
panic attack,
where I'm like, I start to see that moment playing out and I'm like, I'm leaning in. I'm like, yeah. This is giving like Scoop and Falling Into the Fire. Like, there's something that the camera just happened to catch that's like happening. Like, something, an event is happening on Survivor. And it's not people looking for an idol or walking to the well together. It's like something that's happening. And then it just sort of becomes a nothing. And then it ends up like the narrative completely shifts and it's all about Kenzie comforting him. And then we get this moment at the end, which we can talk about in the after show. We'll hold that, actually. But needless to say, that was an example of, like, I felt like, you know, the oil was starting to, like, simmer, but then I just was like, oh, nothing. So that's sort of where I'm at, where I'm like, I'm definitely enjoying it more. I see the food. I'm taking a few nibbles, but I'm not eating just yet. And I feel like, in general, I'm seeing people be like, finally, we're eating. And, like, it's going to take a little bit more for me to get there.
Yeah, well, we were hungry for so long, I think, you know, to get some scraps.
We were starving.
Yeah, it's nice, for sure.
Yeah.
But I need to get full up first. We have some time to make up for. We have some meal debt that we need to repay.
Yeah.
And I think we're on our way. I'm feeling much better about this season, you know, since the mergatory. I hate even that I'm saying that word. But since the mergatory, I'm feeling a lot better. And honestly, it's like I'm kind of eating crow like Wendy Williams here, because I've always said I stand by it. I hate that they have merged. Don't make a mergatory where you've got to earn the merge, and then the second they're merged, you split them into two tribes.
Yeah.
Just delay the merge.
Just do a tribal where two people get voted out.
Do that.
Throw us like do something
or
a little
delay different. The merge by a week.
Yeah, or like, that.
So I don't get merging and then splitting. But that aside, I think we ended up with two interesting groups here and two interesting votes one a little bit more interesting with Soda going home. But I think that the division they got, they were sort of lucky, because I think it played out in an interesting way. And I got to know more of the dynamics and the individuals and sort of like their quirks and how people are working with them or not working with them in like a fun way. Like, I wasn't bored again. It's the second week in a row I haven't been bored. So that's great.
Okay, so for me, I think doing two tribals back to back is a little laborious from a television perspective.
I will give you that. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't need the... You know, because there's always like that few minutes where we're like settling into tribal. And because we had to do that twice, I just was like, is this the most efficient way to do this? I don't know.
But they did get lucky in that the more exciting tribal was second.
Mm-hmm.
So that could have gone the other way around.
But then it's like this whole like, I don't know. I guess it's like because blindsiding is so a part of the game, I saw this clip going around of like D on the... On Fire podcast. Is that On Fire?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's called On Fire.
Yes.
Oh my God. I saw D on the On Fire podcast being like, you know, explaining like what it feels.
I saw D on fire.
I saw D on fire.
Put her out.
She was explaining like what it feels like to be blindsided, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, yeah, but like blindsiding is like as common as not being blindsided. You know what I mean? Like it's not, there's no such thing as a, we're so accustomed to the idea of blindside that it ends up being devalued. So while I agree that Soda gave like it was a more interesting reaction as opposed to a non-reaction. It was not like iconic television was made. We've seen people way more like reactive to their blind side. Sure. I think if anything, what we got from this was like an authentic feeling of the lack of bitterness and like, but then there's also that balance, which to Sota's credit, she did well, because sometimes we see those people that are like excited to have been blindsided. Mm-hmm. And then that veers very much into like the new era of like, I'm just so happy that I got to like play, like I'm in the game, like I am doing it, which I hate. And Sota gave us something in the middle of like an appreciation for having been blindsided, recognizing that it's like, if you're going to go out, let it be this way, while also being genuinely shocked.
Yeah, I got to say, I loved Sota's exit. I really liked how it was, how she handled it.
Yeah, she handled it.
And there was so much more, even like this sort of vacillating between crying and laughing about it and the, like these noises she was letting out. But even before that, to go and turn to Venus, who was like apparently her enemy in the game, and be like, it was you, and Venus saying yes, and then you have all the other people being like, no, it wasn't Venus, but Venus is getting credit for it from the first person who's going to the jury, which is like potentially a problem for them. I think like all of that, there's like, I think a lot of dynamics here going on that are really interesting, especially considering Tevin's trying to take credit for the whole thing, and yet Tevin voted for Venus. And so like his, and there are reasons to do that, perhaps like a shot in the dark, assurance, whatever. But, you know, if Tevin's really trying to take credit for it, that's a little knock against him, because on the record shows that he voted for Venus. And so like Venus, whether she should be taking credit for it or not, her perception is that this is her move. And if she can sell that as her move, that's kind of all that matters. So I think that that whole thing is really interesting. Also, I just want to say, like, we didn't really touch too much on the yellow team's voting dynamic, because it's just that Tim goes home. But wasn't this the wrong move? Don't you send Ben home here? And I'm not sure that I fully got that explained to me as to like why Tim went home, except that they're just annoyed that he's still Siga strong instead of Journey.
Well, wasn't
strong.
It that Q felt that, because Tim was wanting to go after Hunter, that Q sensed his disloyalty and would rather go. Yeah. Well, so doesn't it make sense?
But I feel like this is a case of like, better the devil you know. Like,
well,
as
yeah,
they
that's
said, it's
you
like,
as an intelligent player, but like, Q doesn't have that perception. It's like, I understand what you're saying, but it makes sense why they went with Tim, despite the fact that like, it wasn't. What you're arguing is different from. So you understand it, you don't agree with it.
Sure. Yes. Okay. I guess what I don't understand.
Yeah.
I understand
you want
why
to keep...
Q went that way, but what I don't understand is why Kenzie and Tiff went along with it.
Yeah.
Because I think they knew the better option was Ben.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So, I'm really got my eye on Q. I know we brought this up before, and you think Q's potentially not longed for the game. Like,
well,
Q
that
could
was
be
la-
the
I
one.
Didn't say that. That was
you
last week.
You said
I said it last
you
week.
You said that.
Yeah, I said it last week. Well, I also thought Hillary was going to win in 2016. You know what I mean? You can't take my word for everything. My God.
You also famously declared Emily Flippin the winner of Survivor 45.
You know what? I just got to say, she is a flop. You know, it's funny because it's just funny thinking that, like, do you remember? It's like, I don't even. The reason why she's so top of mind for me is because Caleb was on Rob Has a Podcast this week recapping, and so they mentioned Emily a few times, and I thought about her, and I was like, wow, it's like, talk about someone that you, that burned real bright for like 2 weeks, and then you'll never think of again. Mm-hmm. There's something about like, thinking about Shan and Emily Flippin, where it's like, you don't get like long tail icons. I think Carolyn is the only example of someone who you really got a long game, and I'm not just talking about a long time in the game, I'm talking about just a long time of like, being able to like really enjoy them. It's like when we get these like, you know, these glimmers, they just, yeah, you don't, I don't know.
Yeah, I push back. I think Shan, we did get long enough. Like, I think.
Maybe.
If you really think like, she was voted out sort of like mid-merge point, but like the entire, she never faded into the background. She was always there, which is what made her blindside so interesting and like such a turning point, like not controversial, but it was like divisive amongst the viewers, I think, because
should
was
we
like,
rewatch 41 as our next season?
You, no, you. I do think that 41 is going to be really interesting at some point in life, not necessarily for me, but for somebody to revisit, because I've really been toying with this idea that like the part of the problem with this new era is that's like repetitive, but 41 was really the first to do it. And so like it does have that distinction of, even if we didn't like the twist, it was the first time we were seeing them. It was the first time we were seeing a journey. And sometimes it paid off, like the Shannon Liana journey where they bonded and like there was little moments there. And I do think that it will sort of stand as, I mean, obviously it stands as the turning point in Survivor, but I think it would be hard to go back and watch and try to watch with fresh eyes because we've seen this iteration of the game play out 6 times now. But I think there's some experiment there to be like, imagine the following seasons didn't come. What would we think of this one season? To like go back and, you know, am I going to do that? No, but there's something there. All right. Anything else we need to talk about here? No.
No.
Okay.
Get me out of here.
We got great questions for the after show that I want to talk about. All right, so with that, we're going to head over to Patreon, where we have our after show, which is available right now, and we'll be answering all of your questions. You can find the link to our Patreon in the show notes to this episode, and stay tuned very soon for our Heidi interview, which you do not want to miss, and we'll be back next week to talk Survivor 46, Episode 8. We need an emoji for the meme cap.
Is that, well, I feel like we should, it's like, is there a soda emoji?
Oh, I don't even know.
Soda. Yeah, soda.
Okay.
Soda, and then you tag soda.
Oh yeah, soda follows us.
Great. Soda and tag soda.
Okay, love that. All right, you can find us on Instagram at dropyourbuffspod, where you're going to leave your soda and tag soda. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.